Hello, welcome along to Soundtrackin', my weekly podcast where I get to talk to an incredible creative mind about their journey with music and film and TV sometimes too. And I absolutely love making this podcast and I'm absolutely beyond grateful that you've chosen to listen to this episode. And we've got loads of great stuff coming up on the show in the next couple of weeks as we kind of nudge towards award season. We still managed to get a few brilliant contenders in there before we finish, and also a director who is stepping into his first feature film. He's got the most amazing experience across TV, everything from The Crown to Andor, but Ben Caron has directed his first film. It's called Sharper. It's coming out in cinemas and on Apple in a couple of weeks' time. We're very much looking forward to having him on the show. However, the now and the present and our latest guest on Soundtrackin' is someone who we've been genuinely trying to get on for a very long time, not least because of his collaborations with our very dear friend, the wonderful Clint Mansell. Darren Aronofsky is a truly original and radical filmmaker whose latest movie, The Whale, has seen Brendan Fraser receive widespread acclaim as a reclusive English teacher who is eating himself to death. This film is pretty extraordinary, actually. It's one of those experiences where, you know, sometimes you watch films and it's a bit like watching a beautiful piece of theatre. That's what this film is. And the movement of the characters, the relationship of the characters, but the fact that this, pretty much this entire film is set within the living room of this guy's house. It's very, very powerful. Great performances across the board, actually, and brilliant score. And it is scored by Rob Simonson. And we'll begin with his cue, Flare Gun.
I'm good. Thanks for having
me. So great to get to chat to you.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, we've talked about your films quite a lot on our podcast. We've had Clint on a couple of times.
Lovely.
Going back and, you know, talking about your older films But congratulations on The Whale.
Thank you so much.
It's really quite wonderful. It's quite an astonishing film. It really stays with you as well. You kind of find yourself thinking about so many things after watching it.
Thank you.
For you, was it seeing the play? Did you, what was the journey for you with the story and the characters, first of all?
Yeah, I saw the play about 10 years ago and was just deeply moved with these characters that are just unexpected. They're in no way related to me. Yet by the end of the play, I was just so deeply moved. And that's, for me, the greatest thing about movies is when you meet characters that you don't expect to connect with. And then you go on this journey with them and just they take you somewhere unexpected. And that's what I saw in The Whale.
And in terms of what you saw of what you wanted to take to the screen and that journey from, you know, not lifting the stage play onto the screen sort of thing, but having its own journey from that to that, was that an interesting kind of process for you?
It was a great challenge for me. It's like how not to make the film claustrophobic and how to make it interesting and exciting. And the best compliments I get are people like kind of stunned by the time they get to the end of the film, being like, oh my gosh, that all took place in one apartment. And I was never bored or undistracted. And I always knew the possibility was there because we all watch plays. And when a play is really great, the location doesn't really matter. It's just the writing. That was the kind of goal here, was to take this great piece of writing and just make it transport people into the performances and the emotion of the film.
Yeah, you're in there. It sucks you sort of straight in. Yeah. But there are things that I think are brilliant that give kind of the texture of the outside world almost outside that room, and the elements, the weather that you hear, yeah. you know, the rattling of the windows and all those kind of things. The soundscape on the film is brilliant.
Thank you.
And matched with the music as well. And
thank you.
I didn't see the play, so I don't know what and if there was any music attached to the play and if there was any sort of sound with that and how you saw music's part within the story.
Yeah, I always knew music would be a really important element of it because there was just so much emotion in the film. And of course, music is a great way to sort of underline that and help and counterpoint it. And so very early on, we were trying to figure out how to best do that.
What I love about the way when we hear that first cue is that it kind of really sets a tone. It's quite dramatic. It's quite industrial, if that's yeah. fair to say. It's got kind of a sort of drone nature to yeah. it in a way. And it's kind of it's one of the things I think that really pulls you in. Yeah.
Well, there's also a very nautical vibe to it. Maybe that's the mechanical element, is that we wanted to sort of play with the kind of Moby Dick metaphor yeah. that's hanging yeah. over everything. And Rob Simonson, our composer, was thinking about that a lot.
That first cue instantly kind of is almost kind of welcoming in a way. It's yeah. like, come in, we want to tell you the story.
There's also an oddness to it. You're mm-hmm. talking about that kind of note that's over the bus arriving and
yeah.
stuff, right? Yeah. It's also kind of an odd note, and it just sort of, it's ambiguous, and it's the arrival of the missionary. So there's just a lot going on there, and then it just pulls you in. I thought, I was really happy with the work Rob did.
What were the conversations you had with him? You mentioned that kind of nautical nature. Because now that you yeah, say that, you yeah. kind of almost, with that, when I mentioned the kind of elements and the weather and stuff,
yeah.
you could be on a boat.
Well, that was a big kind of conversation. And there's all throughout the production design, there's little subtle hints at that. Even in the wardrobe, if you think about Sam Morton wearing the kind of fisherman yellow jacket yeah. to the missionary wearing an old pea coat. There's a lot of that going on. Of course, how the weather works was similar as well.
What was it about Rob's work that he was the right man for this job, first of all?
Well, to be clear, what happened first is I hired a different composer. Mm-hmm. And he had never filmed a score. He was very incredible composer, just incredible artist, mm. but he had never written a film.
Yeah.
And I did learn through this process that it's a different job being a composer for operas and other types of music versus actually film writing, which is a different skill. We worked really hard to try to get him into the mindset of what's involved in
yeah.
scoring a movie. So much so that for the first time, I actually did work with a music editor to place some music as kind of signposts. It ended up not working because it was just a different art form. But when I looked at what a lot of the music that we placed in it, a lot of it was written by Rob in past films.
Oh, wow.
So that's how I found Rob. I was like, oh, we're actually already using his music. So clearly, aesthetically, he's in the wheelhouse of what
yeah.
we're doing. But then I think he did something very different for this movie, because as soon as he got on and he started to get some of his ideas, he really leaned into the nautical elements and took that to another level. ¶¶
I love his score for Foxcatcher. I think that's
one. Yeah. Well, that was a big one of the big places we were at.
It's great though to hear that, because it's not always the case where a director gives a composer the opportunity to be different.
Yeah.
Because sometimes composers are hard because of the way they do things. They
right.
go, keep doing what you do, kind of thing. But it's really nice to hear that you're encouraging him to do something different, that you want to kind of, you know, using a different muscle, musical muscle that he has, sort of thing. That must have been really encouraging for him as well to kind of jump into this.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And it was a really good collaboration, because I'm pretty particular and definitely make people do a lot of different takes. And he would just try lots of different things. It took a long time to figure out the musicality, what instruments. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he stumbled on something that really, there are some great, great moments with the music in the film.
Yeah. And was that driven by a combination of character, narrative, emotion?
Always. It always comes out of the character and emotion. I mean, you want it to be as connected to the film as the wardrobe or the design, yeah, or the cinematography. I've always felt that the composer is an equal contributor, and the responsibility of what it can do for a scene is just mind-blowing.
What's really interesting, sometimes when we've spoken to composers in the past, like Nicholas Britell, for example, from If Beale Street Could Talk, you know, he said if it hadn't been Regina in that role, it would have been a completely different set of cues for her character.
Well, that's so interesting.
Sometimes, you know, the composers get the luxury of writing to performance as well as the script sort of thing.
Yeah.
Was Rob privy to Brendan and
Rob came in, as I said, later in the game, because we had gone down a different path for a while. So the film was already kind of muscling up by the time he came on, which was also a different process for me, but we still had a lot of time to really perfect the music.
Yeah.
He did some crazy things. One of the things that was just great is he loved these kind of, I forget what they were called, but these huge, super long flutes that this guy in Scandinavia built, and he had something like a 20-foot long
wow.
Almost like a
didgeridoo.
Yeah, type of thing.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
I love it when you hear about new instrumentation being made.
Love it.
Yeah, it's so great. It's like the guy, Simon from Avatar, was having people 3D make instruments that he was coming up with. Like,
oh, that's amazing.
It's bonkers and brilliant, isn't it? So great. The kind of never-ending opportunity of what you can create with
it's
that.
It's exciting.
So good.
Thank you.
I was watching a couple of lovely videos that you were doing with some of your cast, and it was really great hearing about how open you are to their input and to their, there was a great thing where you were talking about the scene where she's kind of almost interrogating the pastor when he's sat in the living room sort of thing, and she knows what's going on, but she kind of makes out she's not. And she was kind of going, yeah, no, and you were like, no, you came up with that idea. And it's lovely to kind of hear how it's a kind of constant moving beast almost in a way, and that you're really open to how your cast feel and want to move and want to interact, want to be placed within a scene as well. Is that important to you?
Yeah. You always start to see what other people's ideas are before you contribute your ideas. That's the most important 101 lesson I can teach every filmmaker is, don't start with your idea. Just see what other people offer. And sometimes you can be really happily surprised.
It's been really lovely as well to see the response that Brendan's had to this film.
Yeah.
And, you know, so deserving as well. And just that lovely, it's been a kind of bit of a succession with people kind of who've been not forgotten about, but kind of, you know, have kind of fallen into the background in a way, and suddenly they get this moment to shine again as well. It's so heartwarming.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, and I hope a lot of other people will take this as an example of kind of give people a chance.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
What was it about him? Why was he right to cast in this?
You know, people keep asking me that question, and
sorry.
I don't really, no, I don't have a great answer to it, because it wasn't like I was a student of his work.
Yeah.
It just, when the idea of him popped up, it was an idea we hadn't thought about, and we had been looking for a long time to find someone, and there was just a gut feeling that there was something there and exciting. And then when I met him, it was clear he was a really sweetheart and a good man that had run into all these different types of roadblocks over the years, but was really excited and ready to work. But then we did do a read-through of the script, which was kind of an audition. He may not have known that, but I definitely had to prove to everyone besides myself that he was it. But it was very clear from almost line one of the read-through that this guy was Charlie.
When it comes to music for you personally, you know, step aside as a filmmaker, are there scores and cues or music or films where, so I guess the, as a film fan growing up, that you really recognized the importance of music within the storytelling?
You know, it's a very good question. My son actually, from a very young age, used to say, "Hey, Dad, why are they playing scary music now?" And I realized it was just a movie that was manipulating the audience, but I was not aware of it. It was like a skill my son had that I didn't really pick up on.
Yeah.
I think the first time I see a movie, if I'm really in a movie, I rarely hear the score.
Yeah.
Of course, like, what's the name of that? Olympic thing.
Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, thank you. That one I remember. Where it's iconic. Name that tune with someone completely off key and tone deaf. But there are scores like that that you know, or Star Wars, or things that pop through that you become aware of. But so often I'm not really conscious of the score. And so I don't know if that was always an inspiration. From when I first started making films in film school, I was probably the only guy in my class at film school that found a composer to do all my pieces. And I didn't use found music. Like I wanted to collaborate with composers from the beginning and have a score the entire way through. I think The Wrestler was the first time, I mean, Clint and that maybe, I think, wrote 8 minutes of music. There were some elements, but the rest of it's really just hair metal because it kind of went with the piece. But otherwise, I mean, Black Swan was, the whole score was manipulated by Clint, but it came out of Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
But basically, besides that, wall-to-wall music, except well, there's always an exception, Mother, which has no score.
Yeah.
But there was I've always seen it as a huge contributor to a movie, and that was like an important person to have as like an essential department head.
Well, I think like even something like that kind of that beautiful synergy when it works, you know, in terms of the story, the narrative, the performances, the music. Requiem is a great example of that, where it's just perfection.
We're all jamming together.
It's just kind of, you can't almost like have one without the other in a way. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like the importance of it is so there.
Yeah.
With Mother, what was the kind of thought process on that of kind of going?
Well, we worked with Johan Johansson so deeply on that score, and it was really a beautiful score, but it was so interesting because the second you put any type of music onto a scene, it emotionally tilted the scene, and the entire film is about not knowing where the lead character, where Jennifer Lawrence's mother was, what she was thinking. Yeah. I wanted the audience to be off kilter and not following what she was. But as soon as you put anything like a thematic or scary or anything with anything that was, I mean, maybe free jazz might have worked or something really that just filled the space might have worked. We never played with that. Mm. It suddenly tilted the film and turned it into something that was different because it put the audience out of the character's subjective reality. And at a certain point, me and Johan watched the film with and without music, and we kind of both agreed, hey, there are elements we could use from the music. And so there are certain instruments that are more in the sound design, but it just worked better without it. And then the excitement of trying to do a kind of horror suspense film without a score when horror films rely so much on them was also really interesting as a challenge.
Well, I think it's kind of, it can be more powerful sometimes to have silence or to have something that isn't kind of engulfed by something
non-stop.
That you see that's going to manipulate you in a way. When you also kind of make that choice as well, because it's wonderful when you see kind of great storytellers sort of throw their weight to being producers and being supportive on, you know, on other people's productions and things like that, and being, you know, mentors or whatever it is that role kind of is asks of you. How important is that side of you? Because it's great to kind of, you know, when you look at the stuff that you're producing or exec producing aside from your own productions as well. Why is that important for you?
You mean as a producer?
Yeah.
Well, I've always wanted to give back and help. I used to think about when I was a young filmmaker writing a letter to Martin Scorsese and just sort of begging for an opportunity to help. And I'm not asking people to write me letters right now. But we just try to help young filmmakers that are doing stuff that we find inspiring. We're able to sort of do more work now. And when I say we, I have a company that is just really interested in doing documentaries about science and about the environment and human stories. And we've just been pushing that out into the world as much as we can.
That's really interesting. It's brilliant, particularly when it comes to the industry as well, and how it kind of fits into those whole conversations. What's next? Do you know?
It's not clear what's next. This year we got a lot. We put a lot out into the world, and there's some new stuff coming soon.
You must be very proud of the response that the whales had, though, so far.
It's great. It's mostly exciting by just hearing people really choked up by the film. That's been exciting.
You wanted to make people cry.
Love it. Love it.
It's so great to chat to you. And,
Thank you.
Once again, congratulations on the film. I'm excited to see what's next. Thanks so much, Darren. Thank you.
Absolutely. Cheers.
From the Score to the Whale, that's Gentle Waves, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Darren Aronofsky. I must explain to you as well, I had this very strange experience where I went to interview Darren at a swanky London hotel. Now, normally what they do is they remove all the furniture out of these bedrooms and they put sort of nice chairs and things in, so you have the whole room, very spacious. However, on this particular day, the area by the windows that everything was set up at was very much in the vicinity of pretty intense drilling and workmen that were making a lot of noise outside. So I found this little kind of corridor around the sort of the back of the room on the way to the toilet. And I was like, will Darren Aronofsky be okay with sitting outside the lovely toilet in this hotel room? Anyway, he was. And it was, as you can hear, pretty good acoustics. My huge thanks to Darren for taking the time to talk to us. The Whale is on general release now, with Rob's Score available via A24 Music. If you'd like to hear my chats with Darren's old sparring partner, Clint Mansell, along with every other episode of the podcast, please head to edithbowman.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And please do fire over an email if you've got something you want to share with us, or ask to info@edithbowman.com. Next up, I'm very much hoping that we are going to be joined by the wonderful Gina Prince-Blythewood, who directed The Woman King, an extraordinary film with the most breathtaking and memorable performances. So, as of now, it's not recorded yet, but let's cross everything. Gina Prince-Blythewood, our next guest on Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.